Welcome to the For the Church podcast, another great gospel-centered resource from Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. My name is Jared Wilson. I'm an assistant professor of pastoral ministry and author in residence at Midwestern Seminary. And I'm here as always with my friend and my colleague and my co-host, assistant director of ministry placement and policeman, Ross Ferguson. Hey, have you seen?
Have I seen?
The new Mission Impossible.
I have seen the new Mission Impossible.
What did you think about the Mission Impossible?
Tom Cruise has a death wish. some of his scenes are insane.
Yes.
The stuff he does.
I could not figure out how he did that.
I watched a video afterwards on how he did some of the stunts.
The airplane thing?
Yes. And it's crazy.
How did he do that?
By a tiny little metal rope.
Wait, what? But how did he go between planes? He went from one plane to another, didn't he? I thought he did.
They flew together and then he hooked on. Yeah, it's all done by like a metal rope type
unbelievable.
Thing.
Unbelievable.
Here's the thing, though. I think the storyline was lacking a little bit, especially at the end. I was like, oh, come on.
Well, these last two, they've kind of spread this.
Yeah, and I felt the storyline was really being stretched in this one. However, you don't go to see Mission Impossible for the storyline. You go to see Mission Impossible for the stunts.
For the set pieces and the stunts.
And it was great. And I think the phrase that like Tom Cruise single-handedly saved, you know, the cinema, the theater. I think from the big budget, we're going to throw everything at it. He's got that. It's so obvious he's got that. It's just a shame that Mission Impossible is kind of going like the Fast and Furious series of the storylines. Kind of done.
It's getting a little old. Well, there's no one trying to check a small airplane onto an airplane in this one. Although it's not far off from some of the things that
they
do.
Some of the things is
the mask technology.
Yes.
That's a little sketchy.
Yeah.
But so in this one, which I thought is probably the third worst. I honestly like them all.
Yeah.
If I had to rank them, this would probably be third from the bottom or thereabouts, I think maybe. But it had the two set pieces, the submarine, which isn't so like, I mean, I suppose it's stunty, but not.
It's more tense.
It's more tense.
Tense, yeah.
I was like on the edge of my seat the whole time.
And like the whole time you're like, oh, that's about to happen.
The thing was rotating, so the water was changing and
they
had to keep going under.
They actually did that. Like they had a rotating thing and, you know.
It's unbelievable. And then, of course, the plane.
The plane seems incredible.
I didn't know how he did any of that. I thought this guy's going to die doing these stunts.
I read that there was a scene where he punches a pilot and because of the wind, he misjudged his punch and actually punched the guy's head.
Oh, what?
Because of it.
He said
it was so exhausting being on those planes. He had to work out a signal because you can't hear anything because of the wind. He had to work out a signal and his signal was when he lies on the wing, he's just having a rest. Don't worry. Because it's so exhausting to be on that plane. So there's a couple of scenes where he's like lying on the wing and all you see is his face like.
Yeah.
And that's him resting.
It's just incredible. Yeah.
It was good.
It was very good. And speaking of movies.
Okay. I've been looking forward to this.
So this has been a running gag. In fact, people leave it in reviews.
Years.
It's been a long, long time. We did, was it a movie swap? Is that what we did?
No. It was a question about, I think it was a mailbag question about Christian movies. We did a movie swap. We have done a movie swap.
Oh, okay.
But the original, I think you asked me about Christian movies and I let the cat out of the bag and said, I love them.
Yeah.
And you let rip on me. And ever since then, we've done a movie swap.
But this is only the second. That's what I'm trying to get at.
And we've done a second movie swap.
So the very fact that we've only done like one of these and it was a long time ago, months and months ago, and people still bring this up. Means that there's an untapped...
Because you gave me Babette's Feast, and it was horrendous.
It's a great film.
No. Nope.
It is a great film. I don't want to relitigate that. We're gonna litigate a couple others.
Okay.
So, yeah, this should be a more recurring thing, but it's just, you know, time limits and those sorts of things. So the idea behind the movie swap, if this is your first experience with the movie swap, is Ross assigns to me a Christian movie.
Like quintessentially
a quintessential Christian movie. And then I assigned to him a Christian-ish movie, a movie that kind of has a Christian feel to it. Yeah, Christian ethos. So not a Christian movie, or at least from the Christian subculture,
but a Christian-y kind of movie. Yep. And then we come on here and we talk about them, see what we think about them. And we didn't do any advanced.
There's no chat.
I told you that I was watching the movie that you assigned to me, but I didn't say anything about it.
I messaged Jared and said, I think you would have liked this scene. And he literally said, I'm leaving my feedback till the recording. So I think you should go first, but I think I should explain why I gave you the movie I gave you.
So the movie that I had to watch, and I stress had to watch, is 2006's Facing the Giants. Yeah.
So here's the reason why I gave it to Jared. So Jared has consistently said that he doesn't really watch Christian movies and hasn't really ever watched Christian movies. And the last one I gave him because the filmography I thought was probably the best kind of out there in that kind of Christian movie. However, Facing the Giants, I believe, is like the quintessential Christian movie in that if you said to someone, have you watched Christian movies? They'll say, yeah, Facing the Giants. It's the Kendrick brothers, early Kendrick brothers. And when I asked and you hadn't seen it, I thought, okay, I'm just going to say, and I said this to you, not the best, but if Christians have watched Christian movies, they've watched this movie. Mm-hmm. So Facing the Giants, let's hear it.
It was terrible. It was an ordeal. There was even parts that made me angry because the choices they made. Uh-huh. Let me see if I can figure out what they were even doing.
Do you want to sum up what the movie is?
So the one that you had me watch previously, that was Kendrick Brothers as well, because it was the same guy.
That was a later Kendrick Brothers.
Okay. And I forget what that one was called. What was that? It was a track.
Overcomer.
So that's about, he's a track coach. And this one, he's a football coach.
Yes.
And this is, I guess, the original. And it's the same guy, main guy, who writes, or he co-wrote it, directed it, and stars in it. And it was like he saw all of these sports movies and things and wanted to mash them up, but only took, so this is the thing, it has elements of Rudy. It has elements of Remember the Titans.
Yes.
It has elements of Friday Night Lights.
Yes.
Even to the down to the fact that he is Coach Taylor and Friday Night Lights is Coach Taylor. It has, elements of all of those things. But the first problem that I'll mention is he didn't take anything from those movies that made them good. I actually don't like Remember the Titans, but.
Really?
Yeah, no, I don't. Oh. That's a whole other rant that I'll go on another time. He took the cliched aspects of all of them. He was like, what makes these movies cliched? That's what I want. I'm going to take all of that and mash it in. Facing the Giants is like if a Hallmark card and a Precious Moments figurine co-wrote a movie. It is so dumb. It is poorly acted. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I saw this guy do in, and I think he thinks he's a good actor, because he does this thing in Overcomer probably about six or seven times where his eyes well up and his lip quivers and he does there's no camera on me, but I'm trying to like mimic his, I'm about to cry because it's an emotional thing. And one of the critiques I had of that movie was like, there are like these six emotionally climactic moments that start early in the movie.
Yes.
And like the you have not earned any of these payoffs. And it's getting annoying that you're making this stupid, I'm about to cry face. He does it like 20 times in Facing the Giants. He does it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And in the final scene, when she finally, when his wife reveals this news to him,
yes,
and he starts doing it, I was like, I want to punch his face so bad. I was so angry. So let me just see if I can describe this. He is a Christian school football coach. I don't know what it is about the sports thing, but you know, it's just what it is. And they're not good, and they keep losing players. This is kind of a, like Overcomer is kind of like this as well.
Yeah.
They keep losing players. People want to fire him. But wait, there's more. So he is coaching a team that stinks, and they keep losing, and they have no hope of making like the playoffs or going to state, et cetera. His car is a limp. It keeps breaking down. So his car doesn't work. So he's always having to push his car everywhere. What else? There was another thing.
He has a dead rat in his house.
Oh, the house stinks. So there's a smell in the house. So like, where is the smell coming from? That's a huge deal.
They have no money.
And they're infertile. So you take all these things which they have like lumped together, yep. and the infertility itself could have been its own story. Like it's heavy enough. But it was comical that he had to put all of this stuff in, and it kind of reminded me of that scene in Dumb and Dumber where Jim Carrey is like, we don't have any money. We don't like, and our pets' heads are falling off. Yeah. It was like, can I just pile up all the stuff that's happening?
Oh, he's losing his hair.
Oh, is he losing his hair? Oh, yeah. Because he's balding. He's whatever. Balding well, that, as well. That's the only thing that doesn't get fixed in this movie. So I'm like, and then he throws in. He's got the guy in he's got the undersized kid that wants to be a kicker. He's a soccer player. Mm. He's going to try for the football team. His dad is disabled in a wheelchair. I mean, it's ludicrous, the number of things. And like with Overcomer, he starts putting these little climactic moments, these emotionally full scenes, attempted to be emotionally full scenes early in the movie.
Yeah.
So that you get these like emotional moments that the movie hasn't earned.
Yeah.
And I predicted, so I was like, by the end of the movie, they're going to go to state and win. Mm-hmm. His car will be fixed. His wife will be pregnant. And I joked. So the kid, the undersized kid who can't kick, he's going to be the kicker. He plays soccer. And he's like, the whole deal is his deal to overcome is that he's small and can't and shouldn't be a football player. His dad is in a wheelchair. And I was like, by the end of this movie, that dude's coming out of that wheelchair. I was joking. The dude comes out of the wheelchair at the end of the movie. I could not believe.
And the line is, don't touch me. I'm standing for my son.
I'm standing for my son. Brother, the movie was so terrible. The line, I mean, I'm sure they were grabbing people out of the church to do these different roles.
It's the members of their church.
The line readings are so flat. Yeah. There is a scene where the wife goes to the doctor.
Yeah.
And she's going to get tested, I think, to see if she's pregnant. Yeah. She's just getting tested. And she's in the waiting room, and it has these two nurses at the table.
Yeah.
And one of them says, oh, that's Coach Taylor's wife, or that's Mrs. Taylor, whatever. Yeah. And the other nurse says, God bless her. I'm sure she's just a dear lady at this church. Then the most flat line reading possible, she goes, I wonder if she'll be pregnant this time. Neither like
no emotion
excited. Or it almost sounded negative. Like, why is she here? You know, she's not gonna be pregnant this time. You know, and I also just thought it's exposition. There's no reason. First of all, a nurse would not say that out loud in the welcome center of the doctor's office in front of everybody. It was said for our benefit, but we knew why she was there. We already knew she's struggling with infertility.
Yep.
It's just bad writing. I mean, it's just bad writing. It's bad writing. It's bad acting. It's bad everything. And when you get to the end and not even to the end. So they win three games. They're not even in the playoffs.
Nope.
They win three games. He comes out to the parking lot and they've bought him a truck.
They bought him
for winning three games. They hated him. They wanted to fire him. So they buy him a truck. He goes home. I got a $6,000 raise, and he does the quivering face. Yeah. I'm about to cry thing again. And
I actually messaged you about
if it was a DVD, I wanted to eject it, break it in half, throw it in the blender, set the blended stuff on fire. It's terrible. And if you like this movie, you're a bad person.
Okay, so I don't even know what to do with this. Okay, so
there is a scene where it's a playoff game, I think, and they win on a touchdown.
Yes.
They do not show the touchdown being thrown. What they show is some random guy, maybe he's been in the movie previously, but he's not a character.
Yeah.
A guy sitting on his couch, an old man sitting on his couch listening to the game on an old-timey radio.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a radio like from the 40s. I'm like, what had just happened? Why is he – who is this person? Why did they not show this – it would be much more exciting to see the pass and see the touchdown. Who is this guy? And why is he listening on an old-timey radio? Like it's Hoosiers all of a sudden that he's it's so bad. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's just terrible.
I'm going to pick up a few things. There is, I think, one comedic – highlight is his assistant coach is funny at moments. There is some humor.
They do a thing where they're like, your thing, you know, like word association, Lindbergh and Hindenburg or like, whatever.
This is the quote.
The guys writing that, they thought they were being so funny when they wrote that.
So,
They're like, this is gold. But his, keep going.
His assistant coach, I think, is the only funny thing in the kind of movie.
The best actor was the opposing team's coach in the state final game.
With these
Bobby Lee Duke or whatever his name
Bobby
was.
Bobby Lee Duke with these popsicles.
He seemed like a real guy. Yes. And I wouldn't be surprised if he actually was a football coach.
So I'm going to pull out a few scenes. I just want to see what your thought is. If you watch Facing the Giants, there's one particular scene that everybody knows about. And that is Brock going across the football field, carrying the kid on his back.
Oh, yeah, the dead man's crawl. Yes. Yeah.
Thoughts?
It was corny, but it was by far not the worst thing in the movie.
I felt like that was probably the peak of the movie.
It goes on too long.
Yes.
And he's down, the coach is down like yelling, come on, give me more, whatever. It's too long. They don't know how to pace that scene right.
You knew what it was going to be.
But it wasn't terrible.
Yeah, you knew it was going to end that way. It was a little bit cheesy.
Yeah. When he takes the blindfold off, he's going to be in the end zone. Yeah.
And there is an element, I do think that's probably the peak of the movie. Okay, another scene, the red pickup truck. I remember the first ever time I watched this movie and I was like, really? You just pray about it and do well and then you get a pickup?
Brother, that's the message of the whole movie.
The whole message is more money, more pickup. Oh, and by the way, they can now be pregnant. And he finds the rat. That's why the house smells. And everything's going well. Here's the thing with this, though. And I did tell you, it's not the best. But extremely low budget. And one of the things that the Kendrick brothers have done, and I'm not saying they've done it well, but what they have done is they were early in the production of purely Christian movie media. Like this is like their early movie. So the one before it was their Flywheel movie. I didn't get you to watch that. And I think that budget was $50,000. It was atrocious.
Yeah.
But this is like their second movie, which is better than their first. And they do get better along the way.
The only positive thing that I would say is just, you can tell they're using good equipment.
Yes.
They don't have good actors. They don't have good writing. They don't have a good story. They don't have good pacing or editing. Yeah. But you can tell that the cameras are good cameras. And whoever's operating those cameras is pretty good. And, not Spielberg level, but who's Spielberg level?
That is different from Flywheel. Flywheel are church members using their phone in the early 2000s type thing.
Two more scenes that made me angry, if you don't mind. In that doctor's office scene,
yes.
When the woman goes to get tested, they play a song, some kind of CCM song. I don't know what song it was, but they play a song. So you don't hear this dialogue, but you have the nurse going in with a clipboard to explain to her. You can tell what's happening.
Yeah.
To explain to her that she is not pregnant. Yeah. So everyone's sad. She's mouthing, you're not pregnant.
I can't remember
the results are negative or whatever. And you can see her put her head in her hands and she's upset and the song swells. And she goes outside and she stops at the trunk of her car and she says, God, whatever happens, I trust you.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, I'm going to trust you. And it doesn't matter, I'm going to trust you. And then it cuts back. She gets in her truck. And then it cuts back to the doctor's office. And they act out, because the song's still playing. There's no dialogue.
Yep.
The two nurses act out, you had the wrong clipboard. It's very obvious like what they're doing. It's like charades. What? We swapped these somehow, which first of all, how would you do this? Are there no names on these things? Like, it's the dumbest thing in the world, but you had the wrong results. So they're swapping clipboards and the nurse who delivered the bad news looks at the new clipboard or the right clipboard and her face lights up and she runs out of the parking lot to stop the woman, Mrs. Taylor, and stops her at the car and she rolls the window down and she gives her no, it was the wrong results. Like, you are actually pregnant. And I thought, I was so angry in that moment. It was all because it was swapped results and it was all because she prayed at that trunk that's what happened. The Lord reversed everything. The other thing is when you come to the climactic moment of the football game and they've got 2 seconds.
Yes.
And you got to make a choice. They're at the 30 some yard line or whatever. And instead of a final play, like a pass play, they decide they're going to take this guy who's never kicked a field goal beyond, I think he said 39 yards or something. It's 51 yards.
51 yards he's doing.
His decision is this guy's going to kick a 51-yard field goal, which, first of all, a coach would not do. If you've got this puny kid who's made 3 out of whatever, field goals, you're just not going to do it, except this guy believes in God. Yeah. And he brings the kid over. And I'm not lying. This is what happens. He brings the kid over, and the kid was like, The longest I've ever kicked is 39. I'm like, I can't get a 51-yard field goal. I'm too small. Da, 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 da. And the guy goes, do you believe God can help you make that field goal? That's literally what he asked him. Do you believe God can? And the kid goes, if he wanted to, you know. And that's literally what happens. He goes out and he kicks the winning field goal.
Because God wanted
it. Because God wanted him to. And the last scene is like 2 years later and he's playing with his kid on the floor. And up on the wall is, with God, all things are possible. And man, when I was a kid, I had this poster on my wall that was a guy dunking a basketball. And it said Philippians 4:13, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. And I thought, oh man, I'm going to dunk a basketball because Christ will help me do it. That's what this movie is.
I just don't think you prayed hard enough.
It's if you pray hard enough, if you believe God, you can do, you'll get anything you want.
It's strange because
it's a prosperity gospel movie.
And what's strange is when he talks about it and when you actually go into more of the Kendrick brothers, they're not really overtly prosperity.
I know. They're not like Joel Osteen, it's TBN just guys, but
kind of movies.
That's what this is.
But here's the thing. Just like the quintessential American food experience is going to Golden Corral, which is absolutely awful. So you have now had the quintessential Christian movie experience and watched Facing the Giants.
For the Church is excited to partner with Nine Marks Ministries to give away a one-year subscription to the Church Matters Journal to one of our listeners. Church Matters is a quarterly journal written by pastors for pastors. Each issue of the journal depends on the hard-won insights of 25-plus practitioner pastors and aims to equip, encourage, train, and support healthy pastoral ministry. Through the new subscription service, you'll receive each new issue at your doorstep before it is available for purchase as an individual issue. Additionally, journal subscribers will be invited to a quarterly video conference with the journal's editors to ask questions and further discuss topics covered in the latest issue of Church Matters. As I said, we're giving away a subscription, a one-year subscription. To enter the giveaway, visit ninemarks.org/forthechurch. Nine Marks, that's the number nine, ninemarks.org/forthechurch. And we'll be announcing the winner on the podcast on July 23rd. All right, let's talk about the movie that I assigned to you. And I'm really curious. I won't be shocked if you didn't like it, but
I was assigned Simon Birch.
Yes.
Tell me why you assigned it.
Okay. So just some background. Simon Birch is a 1998 movie. It's an adaptation of a novel that I haven't read called A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. John Irving is not a Christian writer. My understanding is the book is even less family friendly than the movie is, or at least, the movie is PG. The book is not PG. And people who love the book hate the movie. They say it has no, I mean, he even changes the name. So it's not Owen Meany, it's Simon Birch now. And it's not even close. And I read an interview recently with John Irving where he said he understands why they did that. And he doesn't bear any ill will. He says he kind of actually likes the movie, but it's not his book at all. So if you're thinking that it's connected or you want to read the book, they're two separate things.
Yeah.
And it's about a little boy who's disabled. He has a kind of form of dwarfism of some kind, but he's always ill and feeble. And he grows up with a friend who is the son of a single mom, and they kind of befriend Simon Birch, who's the disabled kid. And he has a troubled home as well. And I won't say any more about the plot, but it kind of follows their journey. Simon Birch is convinced that God has a plan for him.
Yes.
God has a purpose for him. So I gave it to you for two reasons. Number one, it's kind of Christian-y. It's not a Christian movie. It's not made by evangelicals. It stars Oliver Platt and David Strathairn and Ashley Judd and Jim Carrey. It's a Hollywood movie, so it's not a Christian movie. But it has kind of a Christian ethos, and it has that kind of prosperity gospel. It has the spirituality of a Christian movie. If you just believe hard enough, or God has a plan for you, something's going to happen. And I thought so. And it has an emotional ending, which I won't give away. Yeah. But I thought if Ross would like any of these movies, and I'm not saying that you would, but if you liked any of them, this would be the one because it's
emotional.
Because I don't even think it's that great a movie. This isn't me. So, this isn't like with me with Babette's Feast, where I thought Babette's Feast is a great film.
Nope.
This was me saying, I like Simon Birch. I don't think it's that great, but I think you might like it.
Yeah. So I agree with you that it's a Hollywood movie. So Ashley Judd plays a mother, and then her kind of two love interests, if you will, is Oliver Platt and David Strathairn, who David Strathairn plays a minister and kind of an old flame type thing. I like the fact that Jim Carrey starts the movie and kind of ends the movie as the narrator. That was a little bit of a surprise.
He's the little boy grown up.
He's the little boy grown up. 1998 film set in the 60s. So kind of like a modern 90s film looking back. I disagree in that I do not think this is a Christianese movie.
Okay.
I think this is a Hollywood movie with the occasional Christian thought.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what I mean by Christianese.
So in terms of...
I mean, Facing the Giants had the occasional Christian thought.
Oh, dagger to the heart.
Yeah.
So the storyline goes that Simon Birch is born as a very small child. And I looked it up. It's not dwarfism that he actually has in real like life, but it's something like that. And interestingly, the actor that plays Simon Birch, this little boy, this is his only ever movie. He actually never acts again and becomes a software engineer instead, which I thought was interesting because the entire movie is basically about his medical condition and then he never acts again. So I never really delved into that. But his parents basically hate him because he's this little kid. So the entire movie, this kid with dwarfism has no love from his parents, no care from his parents. And so he befriends this boy, and the name's escaping me, whatever his friend's name is, and they befriend each other. And so they love going to the lake together. His friend has a bike and he has like made a sidecar so his little friend can sit in it. And the whole movie, the way it goes is Simon Birch is genuinely hated by everybody apart from two people, which is his friend and his friend's mother, who's played by Ashley Judd. And it's like Ashley Judd is his mother ultimately in the whole movie. And so the way the movie goes is that the friend kind of protects him, that Ashley Judd's character protects him, but he is consistently, Simon Birch is trying to figure out why he's there. You know, he's got this small stature, this dwarfism. What is God doing? God must have put him in this world for a reason. And Ashley Judd, who plays his friend's mother, kind of says that he's going to be a hero. He's going to be special. There's, you know, God has done, you know, he's this way for a reason. Yeah. And so the entire movie is about why has God given dwarfism to this kid?
How does this not sound like a Christian movie?
I'll get to it. Okay. And so as the movie unfolds, Simon Birch is mistreated, ill-treated, not loved, but he's clearly a very good friend and very caring as an individual. And he's searching, constantly searching. It's interesting that he actually asks the minister multiple times, explain to me how God has a plan. And the minister's useless.
He's terrible.
Absolutely terrible.
He's not good.
And actually, one of my favorite scenes, so I'll start with the good stuff. My favorite scene is Simon Birch, when the minister's talking about come and chat about the activities the church is doing. We'll have coffee and donuts downstairs. And Simon Birch stands up and says, "What does coffee and donuts have to do with God?" and that's the thing, is this little kid with dwarfism that everybody kind of hates shows the minister up the entire movie. At one point, Simon Birch is sent into the corner of the room because once again, he's supposedly done something wrong. And the minister says, you know, you've spent a lot of time in this corner, Simon. His response, Simon Birch's response is, faith is not in a floor plan, which I just thought like, you can't crush my faith. That's kind of what Simon Birch is saying. Yeah. And so it's kind of interesting, and it reminded me of the pageant movie that came out this last Christmas.
The best Christmas pageant.
Kind of this hated child, which turns out to be
the voice of God.
Exactly. Now, as the movie comes to, there's a crucial scene right in the middle of the movie. Simon Birch loves three people, and we kind of see this through the movie. He loves his best friend, he loves his best friend's mother, and he loves this girl that is of similar age to him.
Yeah.
And about halfway through the movie, the crucial scene that sets the rest of the movie up is that Simon Birch is playing baseball. And he is told never to swing because basically the pitcher can never get it at the right level. And so Birch always ends up on the first home, the first base. But this time the coach wants to just end the game and says to Simon, hey, just swing the bat, just swing the bat. So this is like the first time he's ever swung the bat in a baseball game. First one, he chooses not to swing. Second one, he chooses not to swing. And then on the third one, he chooses to swing. Now, this is a stupid scene. It's just a stupid scene.
This is coming from someone who likes Christian movies, by the way.
It's a stupid scene. So this like 3 foot nothing kid who's never swung a bat, swings the bat, hits the baseball, hits a home run out of the park ball, which just happens to hit Ashley Judd's character on the head, and she dies instantly. And I remember I was actually watching this scene on the plane because I was flying back from a conference, and I literally wanted to say out loud, what a stupid scene. Because this kid can't hit a ball. Uh-huh. This kid can't hit the ball that hard. And no way does someone die from a kid's ball hitting their head.
Okay, but can't you see that happening in a Christian movie?
Leave my movies alone.
Come on.
So then this sets up the whole rest of the movie where basically Simon Birch just feels awful and his friendship is kind of strained. The whole community basically just kind of, it just shows more and more that Simon Birch is hated. He ends up ruining the Christmas pageant, and I'll come on to that in a second. But it all culminates with one big question going through this movie. Ashley Judd, the mother of his best friend, never tells his best friend who the father is. And so this movie is kind of like, what's Simon Birch's purpose in life, and who's this best friend's dad? Mm-hmm. And in the end, all kind of culminates in one big scene where they go away for a church kind of camp retreat thing. All the kids are on the bus. The minister's on the bus. Simon Birch is on the bus. The best friend's on the bus. A deer steps out. The bus swerves to miss it, goes down, misses a bunch of trees, but ends up in a freezing cold lake. And Simon Birch, kind of in this scene, figures out his purpose in life. All the kids listen to him because he's like a little kid.
He's like a little kid.
And so he orchestrates the salvation, if you will, of all the children in the bus. And he is able to hold his breath at really long periods of time and saves all the kids. And it turns out, and it's too long to kind of explain, that the minister, the awful minister.
Spoiler alert.
Yes, spoiler alert. The minister, the awful minister, is the best friend's dad. Mm-hmm. But actually, in the end, it's kind of Ashley Judd's boyfriend that becomes the actual real dad type thing. And Simon Birch saves them all. And the best friend gets to be with his dad and mother's boyfriend. But Simon Birch dies in the whole thing because
he gave his life
to save others. But this is again another stupid scene where the best friend and Simon is sitting next to Simon Birch in the hospital, and he's like, "You're the best friend I've ever had," and bursts into tears. And then Simon Birch says, "Hey, it's time for me to go," and then dies. And I just think,
I don't remember that.
It's like a highly emotional scene that is so fake, unbelievably fake, okay. Do you know?
I got you.
So as a movie goes, it has all the hallmarks, if you will, of a Christian movie. What I've left out is some of the weird stuff.
Okay.
And some of the oddities. Uh-huh. So number one, it is a PG.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of swearing in it all the way
through.
Oh, really?
Through.
Yeah, all the
it's
way
been
through.
Years since I've seen it.
So
okay.
I stopped counting at 40 swear words
oh,
used.
Oh, wow. All
so
right.
there is a lot of
I
swearing. But this is quite common in the 90s, actually, that you have a PG film.
Yeah.
I would say this is PG-13 kind. Like, I was thinking, first 20 minutes of the film, I thought, oh, maybe I could watch this with the kids. The language is a no. Like, there is a lot of language in it. And all the kids are swearing all the way through as well. So that's kind of weird. But, I mean, I saw Back to the Future recently. And again, I'm just surprised at how much language it was. Right. I just think the ratings weren't the same as they are now. So number one, this is not a movie you can watch with kids from a language perspective. Number two, there's a weird sexuality stuff all the way through.
Hmm.
So Simon Birch being, it's kind of like hinting to young teen boy, preteen boy, hormones are raging,
the girl crazy.
Crazy. But it's kind of a little odd. So there's multiple scenes where Simon Birch is completely focused and enamored on this girl's breasts. And actually that ruins one whole scene, and that's kind of why everybody hates him. But what's really strange is the whole film actually like focuses on it. So the camera angles, the conversations focuses on essentially a 10, 11, 12 year old girl character. And it kind of trains, like the camera tries to train your eyes to look at this like 12 year old girl's breasts. And because that's what Simon Birch is looking at. Like you're taking the perspective of him. And then he also falls in love with his best friend's mother and says, like, my best friend, your mother's the best of all mothers. Your mother's got the best breasts of all the other mothers. Like, it's really strange. Huh. So you've got this kind of oddity that as a film, it's kind of training your eyes to look at a 12-year-old girl like a 12-year-old boy would. Mm. So there's like a weird sexuality thing going on there. But then also he's overtly enamored by his best friend's mother and even talks to his best friend about it.
Yeah.
And so the whole way through, I just thought this
that is, I remembered. I didn't remember the other stuff.
This is really strange. And actually one of the scenes, Simon Birch horribly has to play baby Jesus. And it's like a really horrible thing to, you know, kind of allow a dwarf child to do this. And he ruins the whole pageant because basically he reaches out and grabs this 12-year-old girl's breasts. And you're kind of going, I'm struggling to see the Christianese element of this movie.
Oh, I see what you're
saying. You've got this kind of really strong language, really odd sexuality kind of going on. But what I will give you is you're right. The emotional element of this hits bang right on the tone. It has excitement. But the big thing is you've got a kid that's hated, a kid without a dad, you have death and a highly emotionally charged scene right at the end, as we've always said, like they should be right at the end, a climax. And actually, Jim Carrey does a great job at starting the movie and kind of narrating how the story goes. And then an amazing job at the end, kind of just sealing it off.
Yeah.
So where I sat with this is much better than Babette's Feast.
Okay.
But... I don't know if in good conscience I could recommend for people to watch it.
Oh, okay.
What, for kids because of the language, and for adults, I felt super awkward about the sexuality element. Not so much the like the 12-year-old boy with the mother. Like I kind of got what they were doing there, which is Simon Birch doesn't know if he should love her as a mother, as the friend's mother, or even just as like as a woman. It was definitely playing on that 12-year-old boy thing, but just the filmography and the suggestive Simon Birch just desperately reaching, wanting to touch girls and things like that. That felt really strange to me, even to the point where when I was watching it on the plane, I was kind of like, I don't know if I want other people seeing that I'm watching this.
So
from that perspective, I'm kind of going, like you're saying, Christianese movie, and I kind of get that because it's like, what's God's purpose for me? But there's no way you could watch this film and not come out going,
see, here I picked I thought I picked a safe one. I have not revisited the movie in a long, long time.
Yeah,
I saw it in the theater in 98, by the way. I was serving as a I was working as a film critic for my college newspaper, and I would get advanced screening things. So I saw it in a sneak preview, and there was not a dry eye.
Yeah.
You know, when it was all said and done, like everyone walked out of the theater just crying and sniffling.
Definitely not.
I don't know, honestly, that I've seen it since then. Probably I have shortly after.
Definitely emotionally charged. Okay. Some great lines, though. Great writing.
Yeah.
And you know how you were saying Facing the Giants has just some awful lines? Like, just to quote a couple, Simon Birch has clearly great faith, but his friend doesn't. And his friend says, oh, I've got faith. I just want evidence to back it up. Mm. And I thought, oh, so many Christians would say something like that. Another one... this one was, there is no accidents. God has all under control. So again, that was great. If we were doing what God wants to do, then there would be no chaos. And again, it was just what he was hinting to as everyone's just doing their own thing. Why are they doing their own thing? We need to be thinking what God wants us to do. Mm. The scenes where the Sunday school teacher hates children, the minister has no ability to communicate the gospel, and also turns out to be kind of a dodgy character himself. It was just a very clever, it was like Hollywood saying, everyone's a hypocrite, but we might be able to find one good person, and that's Simon Birch. But then Simon Birch turns out to have a weird sexuality thing going on. Yeah, exactly. So I'm grateful I watched it, because in some senses I was kind of like, okay, this is better than Babette's Feast.
But you couldn't recommend it.
But I would not recommend it to other Christians.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sorry I recommended it to you. I thought this would be the one that actually hit the mark.
Well,
because it's a Christian movie. That's not a Christian movie.
But that's the problem. If it's to be a Christian movie, it has to be distinctly Christian.
Okay.
Where I don't think this is.
Well, I'll go back to the drawing board for our next movie swap. Yeah. I'll have to think of something else. Yeah, we'll see. I've got some things in mind, but I don't know if you'll... Well, actually, I don't care if you enjoy them or not, because it might make for good podcasting. If you enjoy this podcast, your listener, please give us a good review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. And until next time, may Jesus be big in your church. You've been listening to the For the Church podcast, hosted by Jared Wilson, found online at ftc.co. This resource is brought to you by Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Kansas City, Missouri, where we train leaders for the church.